You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. They are rioting in the streets of Spain. Why? Because the Spaniards have imposed Republican policies on their people. They have taken the Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan budget, basically, and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to shrink the size of government. We're going to cut taxes on rich people. We're going to shrink the size of government. We're going to reduce regulations. We're going to lay off all those regulators and all those people and fire a whole bunch of government employees. And by the way, we're going to lower the minimum wage. We don't need no stinking minimum wage. It's incredible. One woman reported in the New York Times, quoted in the New York Times, the first couple of paragraphs. She'd worked at the post office. Her unemployment benefits had run out. Had been 520 euros a month. Now it's 400 euros a month. She is literally collecting garbage after stores close and the streets are dark and quiet. Unemployment among young people is a consequence of Republican austerity policies in Spain. 50%. 50%. One Spanish city has resorted to installing locks on their trash bins because so many people are trying to find their meals there. And this is the plan that the Romney-Ryan ticket has for the United States? Seriously? Another guy's really upset about his pension. His Social Security is being thrown away. Yeah, that's right. I forgot. Paul Ryan says that is a communist, basically a communist program, a socialist program. It's a wealth transfer. Right. You pay into Social Security your entire life. You get a little bit back at the end of the year. That's a wealth transfer. This is terrible stuff. We can't have that. Group of mayors and unionists in southern Spain, where unemployment rates are higher than the average, recently staged Robin Hood raids on two supermarkets. Loading carts with this is from the New York Times. Loading carts with basic foods and pressing them to donate more food to the needy. These are mayors. Do we really want this kind of economics for the United States? I mean, this is what Naomi Klein wrote about years ago, called the shock doctrine. Is this really what we want? Meanwhile, here in the United States, Sensata, the workers from Sensata, this company that Bain Capital has taken over, where they first of all, they came in and they said to the workers, we need you guys to build a platform. Okay. Then they came in and a bunch of guys from Bain stood on the platform. They assembled the several hundred workers in front of them. This is a company that makes auto parts, right? They've been doing it for, you know, decades, maybe a century, long time. The Bain guys stand up on top of the platform and they say, we're here to tell you that all your jobs are going to China. And by the way, the people in China who are going to be doing your jobs, they're going to fly over here to the United States for a while, and you're going to train them. The headline today over at rawstory.com, workers beg Romney to stop latest Bain outsourcing. Being told to train, this is incredible. Being told to train his replacement was humiliating and surreal, but Tom Gallarup said the worst part was when the plant's U.S. flag was taken down before the Chinese engineers arrived. Now, you know, let me say this for the 6,000th or 7,000th time. I have nothing against China. They are doing what we should be doing. They are doing, you know, what the Chinese did is they looked at what Alexander Hamilton wrote in 1791 and George Washington adopted in 1793, a protectionist trade policy which stood until the Nixon administration began chipping away at it. The Reagan administration really began blowing it out. And then every administration since then has adopted, Democratic and Republican, has adopted the religion of free trade. And it is that. It is a religion. Religions are by definition, belief systems lacking evidence. Right? You believe in the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster? Got any evidence? No, but I believe it. Do you believe that this planet was created by a guy who lived on another planet and had so many wives and did so many good things in his life, became so rich and powerful that he himself became a god when he died? I mean, you can choose to believe it or not. Mitt Romney believes it. And if he does really good, he gets his own planet when he dies. And his wife can worship him there. Amazing. Bain Capital doing this. And then on top of that, we've got this insane push-pull. I'm going to lock out the calls here so Danielle can take a minute and print the damn thing out for me. Conservative group hits claims Obama has communist beliefs, compares his policies to Hitler's. This, the Center for American Progress. Actually, you know, I can just do this myself online. Hold on just a minute here. I think progress. This is amazing. Do you know what a push poll is? There's a difference between a poll and a push poll. Okay, a push poll is where you are basically trying to say to people, you're trying to convey information to people. There we go. View the whole survey here. Here's the question. This is from the Ralph Reed. First of all, Ralph Reed is the disgraced. Yeah, that's print out. Please hand it to me. Is the disgraced former Jack Abramoff buddy. And you'll recall Jack Abramoff was, you know, playing two sides against the middle. And this, by the way, Don Siegelman, and you can sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman at donsiegelman.org. He got in the middle of this because Don Siegelman was in favor. Now, he didn't make a penny off this and he didn't make any campaign contributions off this, but he thought it was the right thing to do. Let's have, in the state of Alabama, let's have a lottery and use the money to pay for education. Well, the Native American tribes didn't like that. And, you know, Ralph Reed, good buddies with Karl Rove and Jack Abramoff. And so they all decided, that, you know, we're going to take out Don Siegelman. So, anyhow, Ralph Reed was in the middle of this thing. There's been a movie made about it. Frankly, I think, you know, from watching that movie, you get the strong impression that Jack Abramoff wasn't the only one who should have gone to jail. Ralph Reed should have been in the cell with him. But Ralph Reed has reinvented himself, and now he's sending out the 2012 voter registration confirmation survey. Like, yes, I want to confirm that I'm going to vote, so I better fill out this survey. It looks official. Issue summary. The anti-American communist dictator of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. First of all, dictator? I thought he was democratically elected. Anyhow, the anti-American communist dictator of an anti-American? I thought he was giving away free heating oil to citizens of New England in the winter. Poor people. Anyhow, the anti-American communist dictator of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, calls Barack Obama Comrade Obama and remarked that he believes President Obama is to the left of himself and Fidel Castro. And then it asks a couple questions about that. You think that's, you know, that Obama's really to the left of Castro or even more or less? These are called push polls. He says he's going to send this to 10 million American taxpayers and pledge to vote of 10 million American taxpayers. Ralph Reed, driving the vote.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, it's really pretty sad when I'm lacking adjectives I can say on the radio. People who should be in jail like Ralph Reed are driving these kind of. Okay, so if you're one of the 10 million Americans who got this in the mail, assuming that Ralph Reed's numbers that he publishes on his survey are accurate, Let me just ask you some of these questions. This is the 2012 voter registration confirmation survey. In other words, this is your confirmation that you're registered to vote. Right? I think most people are going to think that. It's got a nice little barcode at the top that doesn't actually look like a barcode, but for most people it probably looks like a barcode. Instructions to voters. Please use a pen or pencil to mark the answers that come closest to your point of view. Fill in the entire oval like this. Leave blank any questions you prefer not to answer. Feel free to write your own answers if you don't see your point of view in the answer question. Blah-de-blah. Issue summary. The anti-American communist dictator of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, calls Barack Obama Comrade Obama and remarked that he believes President Obama is to the left of himself and Fidel Castro. Question number two. Question number one was, how do you rate Barack Obama's job performance? And it runs from excellent to abysmal. Excellent, good, fair, poor, abysmal, undecided. And here's the last one. I consider him an enemy of liberty and the values that built our great nation. No, I'm not making this up. This is the form that many Republicans think they have to fill out in order to confirm the fact that they are registered to vote. Maybe many swing voters. Question number two, do you think Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro see President Obama as an ally of theirs? Or do you think Chavez was just joking about President Obama's communist beliefs? A, I think Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro see President Obama as an ally of theirs. B, I think Hugo Chavez was just joking. He and Fidel Castro didn't really see President Obama as an ally of theirs. Question three, when Fidel Castro hailed the passage of Obamacare as a miracle, do you think this is because he is honestly concerned with the well-being of Americans? Or is it more likely that Castro sees Obamacare as the fastest, surest way to bring socialism, or worse, to America? Answer A, I think Fidel Castro, keep in mind, swing voters out there, you got to fill this thing out, Ralph Reed. The guy who should have been in jail for the Abramoff scandal, the guy who was helping the who was screwing the Indians while he was helping the Indians on the whole casino thing, making all his money on the casinos. He's now he's a value voter, right? He's a good Christian. He's a hustler, is what he is. So, or was he just joking about President Obama's communist beliefs? A, I think Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro see President Obama as their... I read that one. Okay. Was Obamacare a miracle? When Fidel Castro hailed the passage of Obamacare as a miracle, do you think this was because he is honestly concerned with the well-being of Americans? Or is it more likely that Castro sees Obamacare as the fastest, surest way to bring socialism, or worse, to America? A, I think Fidel Castro hailed the passage of Obamacare as a miracle, in quotes, because he is honestly concerned about the well-being of Americans. B, I think Fidel Castro sees Obamacare as the fastest, surest way to bring socialism or worse to America. G. Issue summary. When radio host Paul W. Smith asked liberal Congressman John Dingell, Democrat of Michigan, why it will take the government until 2014 to set up the Obamacare system, Dingell said this, quote, it takes a long time to do the necessary administrative steps that have to be taken to put this legislation together to control the people. Underlined. Control the people. Underlined. Source, News Talk WJR Radio with Paul W. Smith, 323-2010. Question number four. Do you think leftists like Congressman John Dingell, Nancy Pelosi, and Barack Obama are truly looking to improve health care quality and affordability in America? Or do you think they are mostly using the government takeover of health care as a way to get more control over your life? A, I think leftists like Dingell, Pelosi, and Obama are honestly concerned about making health care better and more affordable for America. B, I think leftists like Dingell, Pelosi, and America and Obama are mostly using the government takeover of health care as a way to get more control over our lives. So are leftists like Dingell, Pelosi, and Obama honestly concerned about making health care better, or are they just doing it to take control over our lives? Question number five, what is your opinion of Obamacare? Strongly opposed, generally opposed, strongly support, generally support. Question number six, would you like to see Obamacare repealed? Yes, no, partially. Question seven, Will you be taking the vote of your representatives on a repeal of Obamacare into account when you vote on their reelection or defeat in 2012? Question eight, how important is your congressman and senator's actions on Obamacare in determining your vote? Very important, important, not important, undecided. Question nine, what do you think is President Obama's true political ideology? Mostly conservative, moderate, mostly liberal, far left, socialist, communist, fascist, not sure. Question 10. How much danger do you think liberty is in right now as a result of President Obama's policies, actions, and agenda for America's future? Mark as many answers as you think appropriate. A. More serious than the threats we faced in World War II from Nazi Germany and Japan because the attack on liberty today is from our own government. B. More serious than the threat we faced in the Soviet Union during the Cold War. C. More serious than the American Civil War. D. All of the above. E, serious but not as serious as the threats to liberty listed above. F, President Obama is not an enemy of liberty. Absolutely incredible. Question number 12. Are you currently registered to vote for the all-important 2012 elections on November 6th? Yes or no? If your answer is no, would you like the Faith and Freedom Coalition to send you a voter registration kit? Yes or no? Question 13. Will you solemnly pledge right now to vote on November 6th if you are physically able to do so? Important. Please sign on this line to verify your pledge to vote in 2012. Keep in mind, they're sending this to religious people in the United States. Question 14. Will you also pledge to try to bring like-minded friends with you to vote on November 6th or take steps to make sure they vote? Amazing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So I'm just curious, if you were one of the 10 million Americans who are going to get this thing in the mail over the next few days, how would you answer it? What would you do? What would you recommend to your friends? Tom Hartman here with you. So, how would you answer these questions? Is this the October surprise? Is this the thing that Mitt Romney thinks is going to win the election for him? I mean, could be. Could be. Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark, what do you think?
Oh, hi. Well, I would point out, that the idea that some kind of, that Obamacare or even more so like a single-payer healthcare system would be some kind of threat to our freedom is really false. I mean, it would give us more freedom. It would give us all more freedom.
Well, hang on just a second. Here's the issue summary. When radio host Paul W. Smith asked liberal Congressman John Dingell why it will take the government until 2014 to fully set up the Obamacare system, Dingell said, "It takes a long time to do the necessary administrative steps that have to be taken to put the legislation together to control the people."
Yeah, well, who knows what he really meant by that? Of course they're framing it as
well. Obviously, it means that Obamacare is all about controlling the people. I mean, otherwise, why would the 2012 voter registration confirmation survey ask the question? When do you think leftists like Congressman John Dingell, Nancy Pelosi, and Barack Obama truly are looking to improve health care quality and affordability in America? Or do you think that they're doing it to get more control over your life? When Dingell just said he wants to control your life. I mean, obviously, Obamacare is part of a nefarious plot by a secret Muslim president who hates America, who wants to take away our freedoms to die in the street like a dog if we get sick.
Yeah, well, and more importantly, the freedom it takes away is the freedom of, big business owners and business owners that is at the expense of everybody else's freedom. Their freedom to exploit us enslave us like their own herd of pack animals,
Oh, but, Rick Perry laid this out yesterday. I believe that Shano has that thought. Rick Perry laid it out. Well, he said it very simply. Freedom, the freedom agenda, freedom. Republicans are all about freedom. What are those freedoms? Freedom from taxation, freedom from litigation, and freedom from regulation.
Right, exactly what I mean. The freedoms of big business, to, you know, I mean, government, the purpose, the legitimate purpose of government is to protect the weak from the strong.
And well, no, not according to Republicans. Want, the legitimate purpose of government is to protect the freedom against taxation, regulation, and litigation. Here it is. Here's Governor Goodhair right here.
As we go forward, America needs to be about freedom. It needs to be about freedom from overtaxation, freedom from over litigation, freedom from over regulation.
There you go. I mean,
well,
you know.
That's some people's definition of the United States, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just incredible. Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Steve in Chicago. Hey, Steve, you want to argue with me?
I don't want to argue with you, but I just wanted to I listen to you off and on, and you seem like a pretty smart guy, but I'm a refrigeration guy up in Chicago, and mm-hmm. I make probably about $85,000 a year. But
right, good on you.
A ton of tax.
You're doing about twice what the average household does. You're making about a little more than three times what the average worker in America makes. That's great. Congratulations.
Well, I work a lot of overtime and this and that. You know, I got two kids, but
sure.
Now that this Obamacare, I mean, I've talked to my union people and this and that, and it's going to make my union dues go up. It's going to, you know, I'm going to have to pay quite a bit more.
Why is that?
It just is. We're our union.
The union has nothing to do with Obamacare.
Yeah, it does.
How?
Yeah, it does. We negotiate our because we got like 9,700 people on our health care program.
Right.
Okay. So that our actual health insurance premium is going to go up, which is going to in turn.
No, actually, Obamacare is going to lower health insurance premiums.
Well,
they even passed a law. Have you gotten a check from your health insurance company yet this year?
From my health insurance company?
Yeah, I got one. Most people got one.
No, I didn't get one.
You didn't get one. Okay, you might want to check. You know, if somebody else at your home gets the mail, like, you know, my house, Louise gets the mail, and, you know, I don't always catch things. But Obamacare, you know, it used to be before this horrible government regulation that your health insurance company could basically rip you off all they wanted. You pay well, let me just finish the sentence here. You pay $1,000. You pay $100. You know, they could spend 50 of it on taking good care of you. They could spend 40 of it taking good care of you. They could spend 80 of it on taking good care of you. Medicare pays $97 out of every 100. Obamacare says you must spend $80. And if you didn't spend $80 last year taking care of people out of every 100 you took in, you have to send them a refund check. And all over America, millions and millions of people have gotten refund checks. Obamacare cuts back the cost of health care.
Okay. Just real quick, one other thing. But that's not what my union has been telling me and this and that. But besides all that, okay. So
tell them to call me.
I'm making three times more than the average American and this and that. But don't you think it's kind of unfair for me to have to, seriously, a guy like me, working guy, barely making his meat.
Right.
Don't you think it's unfair for me to have to pay more freaking taxes?
Well, that's the point. First of all, if you go back to the Supreme Court decision that defined Obamacare as a tax, do you know which part of Obamacare they defined as a tax?
Which is that? Which is what?
In Massachusetts, let's use Massachusetts as an example because Obamacare really should be called Obamacare because they're identical. In Massachusetts, about 0.7% of all the people in the state choose not to sign up because if you make less than $80,000, you get all kinds of discounts. In fact, if you make less than $50,000, you get it for free. And if you make more than $80,000 and less than, say, $150,000, $200,000, you're basically paying what you're paying right now. If you make more than $200,000, you pay a little bit more. Actually, I think it's $250,000. There's like a small surtax, 3% or thereabouts. So bottom line is you can choose not to get that health insurance, even though if you're making less than $50,000, it's like free. You can choose not to get it. You can just say, I'm going to take a principled stand and not get health insurance. If so, you get a fine once a year that the IRS collects. And by the way, you can say, I don't want you to collect this fine. And they will say, okay, here's the money back. They don't have enforcement power over this. But that fine is $750 a year because you chose not to have health insurance. You chose to be what Mitt Romney refers to as a free rider. You chose to be one of those people who, if you get in a car accident, I'm going to have to pay for repairing your body. Okay, the percentage of people who do that in Massachusetts is 0.7%. The estimates from the Congressional Budget Office, which is like, you know, half Republicans, half Democrats, whatever, they're nonpartisan. was that nationwide, it might be as much as 1.2%. So 1.2% of Americans who choose not to have health insurance. Now, the poor people are not going to choose not to because they get it for free. Working
exactly.
people who make less than $80,000 a year aren't going to choose not to because they're going to get it for almost nothing. People who already have it through their employers are not going to choose not to because they're going to continue to get it through their employers. And in fact, their employers are going to see their premiums go down. The only people who might choose not to get it are people who are very, very wealthy and are just trying to make a statement because if they, you know, they're rich enough that, you know, if Mitt Romney gets sick, he can just write a check, right? And those people have to pay the $750 a year fine. That fine is what the Supreme Court said was a tax. So the only tax in Obamacare is if you choose not to have health insurance. That's less than 1% of Americans. So you ask the question, and it's a legitimate question. You know, I'm making $85,000 a year. Why should I have to pay a tax for Obamacare? Well, the fact of the matter is you don't have to pay a tax.
So then nothing will change for me at all then?
No, well, actually, what you're going to find is that your health insurance has to spend, your health insurance company has to spend $80 out of every $100 they collect on health insurance, on health care, on actually paying doctor's bills. And they used to not. They used to keep a lot more than that. You know, the CEO of United Healthcare, Stephen Hemsley, has made over $1 billion in the last, you know, decade or so. The guy before him, Bill McGuire, made $1.7 billion. This is how much money has been sloshed around in these health insurance companies. There's 100 people at United Healthcare making over $1 million a year. Now they won't be able to pay those kind of outrageous salaries because they have to spend 80 cents out of every dollar. And by the way, if we had gone with Medicare for all, Medicare spends 97 cents out of every dollar because there's no dividends to stockholders like Mitt Romney. There's no, you know, billion-dollar paychecks to CEOs. There's no million-dollar paychecks to senior executives. There's no, you know, fancy marketing materials and brochures and advertising. There's none of that. All they do is write checks to pay for the bills in the hospital and for the doctor, which is what I think would be a better system, frankly. But that's not what we have. We are going to use health insurance companies. And so they said the deal that Obama cut, and it wasn't just Obama. There were a couple of Republicans and all the Democrats in the House and Senate. The deal that they cut with the health insurance companies was we're going to give you 30 million new customers. In exchange for that, you got to stop screwing people. And from now on, you can only keep 20%, $20 out of every $100 you take. Because before, right, some of these companies were taking $25, $30, $35, $40. In most states in the union, there's only one or two companies you can buy health insurance from because they're basically monopolies. And so people were screwed. And furthermore, Obamacare says, oh, and by the way, no more lifetime caps. So if you get, you know, if you have a child who's born with a birth defect and over the course of their life it's going to cost more than $1 million, your entire family doesn't get thrown off your health insurance, as has happened to tens of thousands of Americans over the last decade. No longer can a health insurance company screw us this way. No longer can, if you change your employers or if you decide to start your own business, if you decide to go out and start a refrigeration business on your own and say you've got a, you know, high blood pressure, you have a pre-existing condition, before Obamacare, the new health insurance company could say, we're not going to cover you. You've got a pre-existing condition. Now, with Obamacare, they have to say, okay, we're going to cover you. I don't see where this is a bad deal, Steve. Do you?
Well, I don't think that's a big deal, but
And the tax is only if you decide not to have any insurance.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So how would you answer this survey? How much danger do you think liberty is in right now as the result of President Obama's policies, actions, and agenda?
Yeah, we got our election, but corruption has a chance. We've got to have a clean win to regain confidence. America is beautiful, but she has an ugly side. We're looking for a leader.
Welcome back, Gary in Pocatello, Idaho. Hey, Gary, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you, and I'm really glad that you and your wife are doing better physically.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to call and say on that survey that he would not like the way I fill it out because I am a deep blue spot in a sea of red.
Yeah.
And I can't believe the misinformation that's going on. around this state.
See, this is just an absolute win-win for these guys, because if you answered any of these questions, you know, no, I don't believe this garbage or anything like that, or wrote, you know, nasty things on it or whatever and sent it back, they just throw it away.
Yeah, all that, I'm sure they probably, it would probably burst into flames when he was reading it. So, but I just wanted to call and get my best to your wife and keep up the good work, please.
Thank you very much, Gary. Thanks for the kind words. I appreciate it. We probably all should stop, you know, wishing Louise and me well, because you know you just never know that it might jinx things. You know, but thank you, Leon, listening on AM 1600 North East Orange, New Jersey. That'd be WWRL. Hey, Leon, what's up?
Yes, sir. My pleasure. About this religious right stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something to hide behind. It's just to hide their horns, hide that they're racist bigots, and they've been that way all their lives.
Right.
Now that racism and bigotry is starting to calm down, they don't want to show that they really are.
Right.
So they hide behind this, this religion thing. It's all crap. Thank you.
You're welcome. I think I'll just let that stand. Rich in Sun City, Arizona. Hey, Rich, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
Just wanted to make a few points about people keep wondering what the Republicans are doing with all these tactics. And first point is they started redistricting, trying to absorb part of the Democratic areas.
Oh, this goes back to the 19th century, you know, gerrymandering.
Right. Well,
yeah,
that's right. But I mean, it's accelerated now.
Yeah.
And they're trying to take what they're trying to, get two representatives for one in the House.
Sure.
And are diminishing the Democratic areas.
Yeah.
The other thing is, and then they started changing the voting hours and the voting days. This is their other new tactic.
Yep. Cut back on early voting, cut back on
absentee. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And now with the IDs. You see, and my take on this is this. They are trying to establish, as the man that beat Lugar in Indiana said, he was going to Washington to make them the permanent majority.
Right.
By definition, the permanent majority or a single party rule is totalitarianism.
Yeah, it's
and we saw how that worked out.
Yeah, and you can see how that works out in you know, half a dozen countries, a bunch
of
countries around the world.
And the American people don't even see this. And the Republican, the people who belong to the Republican Party, they have no problem with this.
Yeah.
You see, they're not Americans anymore. They're American Republicans, or they're American Independents, or they're American Democrats. We are not Americans anymore.
Oh, I'm not that despairing, frankly, and I know the president isn't either.
No, I know. No, but I'm saying we are what we identify ourselves with, our ideology.
Uh-huh.
And the Republican ideology is an ideology of the elite.
Yeah.
As far as the Republican parties, and they've demonstrated in everything that they've done, the American public is disposable in this respect. For everybody who loses a job, there's 10 more that can fill it.
Yep. In the United States. There's 1,000 more outside the United States.
Yeah, they are literally not worried about people being unemployed.
Right.
If you notice, companies are making money hand over fist.
Yep.
Because those who are working, they're going to have to pay more money.
Oh, it's the highest. Right now we have the highest corporate profits we've had in 40, 50
exactly.
years.
Exactly.
And
because
corporations are sitting on more cash than they have ever sat on in the history of the United States.
Right. Exactly. And yet they keep complaining, well, why aren't they hiring?
Yeah.
Why is anybody going to hire anyone if they're making record profits and they're doing the work with 10 people? Why on earth are they going to go out and hire two or three more?
Well, if they're doing the work with 10 people and they've got a contractor in, you know, some other country, and it can be on, you know, any one of five continents, who will do that, you know, whose employees will do it for one-fifth the cost? And that gets back to our insane trade policies. Excellent point, Rich. Well said. Thank you. Al in Miramar, Florida. Hey, Al, what's up?
Hi. I was kicked out of a Mitt Romney rally earlier this year, but I was a supporter and a volunteer for his primary campaign, yet I was kicked out over a poster that had the phrase Cuban coffee on it. I was verbally attacked and told that I was, my sign was offensive and anti-Mormon. It was implied that I was an anti-Mormon person.
Why'd you have a sign that said Cuban coffee?
Oh, it was a clever sign, Tom. The rally was held at a Cuban restaurant that serves coffee. And my wife is Cuban American, and the venue was such that most of the supporters were Republican Cuban Americans.
Right.
So I put together this clever sign to show my support for both Governor Romney, the Tea Party, and Cuban American pride.
Right.
What made it worse is my wife was bedridden that week. She has survived breast cancer surgery and chemotherapy and had a hysterectomy that week.
Yikes.
So I went there with this sign with the intention, the good intentions of having to meet Ann Romney and have her sign my poster, but rather I was asked to either to destroy the poster or leave or risk arrest.
Because they thought that it was some kind of Democratic trick or something?
I think they were, exactly, they were on their guard. There were three handlers, by the way. This wasn't just one volunteer. It was three people. Two of them were managers or supervisors. They just had me pegged as somebody who wasn't there to be on his side. I had a Tea Party T-shirt on, and back then, many Tea Party supporters were rooting for Paul or...
Sure, yeah, so that could have made you an enemy as well. Al, an interesting story. Thank you very much for calling and sharing it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. What? You know, you keep wondering what the October surprise is going to be. There's always been one, right? You know, the Republicans have always had... Actually, the Democrats once had an October surprise. The Republicans blew it up. Richard Nixon blew up... Well, the arguably the original October surprise was in 1968. Back in 1968, for those of you not around back in that day, the Democratic National Convention was held in Chicago, and there was this riot between the police and the anti-war protesters because the anti-war protesters were really upset that the Vietnam War was about halfway through. Tens of thousands of Americans had died, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of Vietnamese had died, and nobody could explain why. In fact, it was leaking, you know, it had pretty much leaked out at that point that the whole rationale for it, that you know, we'd had a ship bombed in the harbor off the coast of Vietnam was phony baloney, was made up. So why were we there? I mean, we couldn't even come up with a good reason. Like, there's a lot of oil there. There was speculation that there was bauxite or, you know, there's the raw material for aluminum. Nobody really knew. Now, there's a whole another long story there. When Lamar Walter and I were writing the book about the John Kennedy assassination, and we were talking with Harry and Ricky Ruiz Williams, who was very, very close friends with Bobby Kennedy. And Williams was, you know, one of the leaders of the Bay of Pigs invasion, which, as you know, went south during the John Kennedy administration. And they had this assassination of Castro all organized for December 5th, 1963. Kennedy was killed a few weeks earlier, and Harry and Bobby went into Lyndon Johnson's office in early December, like December 1st, 2nd, whatever it was, a couple days before, and said to LBJ, hey, you know, we can still assassinate Castro. We've still got these people in place. You know, Almeida is still the head of the army, and he's willing to take over, And you know, we got these people who are going to take credit for the shooting in place, and they're going to go in there, you know, Oswald and these other guys. And we got this thing organized. But LBJ was so flipped out because at that point he actually believed that Kennedy had been killed by Castro. He was so flipped out that he started yelling and screaming at him. Harry told me this story personally. That LBJ started swearing at him and saying he wanted nothing to do with those, you know, fill-in-the-blank Cubans, and he wasn't going to, you know, he was over it. He was, and now back in that day, because of Joe McCarthy and the right wingers and Fred Koch and the John Birch Society, if you wanted to be president of the United States, Republican or Democrat, you had to make a stand against godless communism. That's why in 1954 they put "In God We Trust" on our coins, right? Got to make a stand against godless communism. So LBJ told Harry and Bobby Kennedy, I'm going to make my stand against communism on the other side of the world. Damn it. We're going to do it in Vietnam. Right. That worked out real well. So in 1968, right, 6 years, I guess it was, 5.5 years into the Johnson presidency. You know, he picked up a year, the last year of the Kennedy presidency, and then he had his own, he got elected for another 4 years. Or was it another eight? No, let's see, 66. Yeah, it was another 4 years. So in 68, LBJ had actually negotiated peace between South and North Vietnam. And then the head of the Republican Party down in New Mexico contacts Madam Tu, you know, the, you know, one of the leaders of South Vietnam, and says, hey, don't go to Paris. Don't cut that peace deal with North Vietnam. Richard Nixon, if he becomes president, he'll give you a better deal. Now, this was going to be the October surprise. In October, Lyndon Johnson was going to make a public announcement that he had cut a deal with the South Vietnamese and the war was going to end by the end of the year, which would have meant that Hubert Humphrey would have won the presidency because he was the vice president. He would have won the presidency in a landslide. It would have been a no-brainer. So the Republicans looked at this and said, holy cow, it's an October surprise. We can't have that. And Richard Nixon contacted the South Vietnamese and said, do not make peace with the president. Keep that war going. And when Nixon comes in, he will cut you a better deal and he'll make you all rich. And so Lyndon Johnson called up Everett Dirksen, the leader of the Senate Republicans, one of the most respected statesmen. Everett Dirksen was actually a statesman, a Republican, but a statesman. In 1968, he was the leader of the Senate Republicans. In fact, they named the Senate office building. I think it's the building that Bernie's office is in, the Dirksen building over here. They named a Senate office building after him. Lyndon Johnson calls up Everett Dirksen, the head Republican, and says, you know, we're reading their hand. I mean, he had the CIA intercepts, right? He knew what the Nixon campaign was saying to Madam Tu, to the South Vietnamese. He says, we're reading their hand, Everett. This is treason. Now, I don't want this to get in the press, because he didn't want the American people to lose faith in American government. He believed that government was a sacred institution. You know, like the Goddess of Liberty, the District of Columbia, the District of the Goddess, all that kind of stuff. Lyndon Johnson believed in that. He believed that the American people should continue to believe that American government was good and that government should be good. It's why he pushed through Medicare and the Great Society. He literally went to his grave with this secret. This tape was not released until 2 years ago. Here's Lyndon Johnson talking to Everett Dirksen about the treason that Richard Nixon was in the process of committing in October of 1968.
Here's the latest information we got. The agent says that they just talked to the boss in New Mexico. And that he says that you must hold out. Just hold on until after the election. We know what Chu is saying to him out there.
Yeah.
We're pretty well informed on both ends. Now, I'm reading their hand, Everett. I don't want to get this in the campaign.
That's right.
And they oughtn't to be doing this. This is treason.
I know.
This is treason.
I know.
So anyhow, the first October surprise, arguably, at least the first one I know about, was 68, and it was Lyndon Johnson's. It was a Democrat. So then the next October surprise, the next big one, was Bill Casey was managing the Reagan campaign, and he cut a deal with the Iranians, who had taken, you know, after the Shah got overthrown during the Jimmy Carter presidency. Shah got overthrown because he got cancer, he got sick, he came to the United States for treatment, and, you know, people there took over the country. And they took the U.S. Embassy residents hostage. And Bill Casey cut a deal. Just hang on to those people until the moment Ronald Reagan's sworn into office, and we will sell you spare parts for that giant military that Iran had at that time that was all American stuff because, you know, we sold it all to the Shah. That was called the Iran-Contra deal. In fact, we took the money from selling those things to Iran and used it to support the Contras, to buy guns for the Contras. The Nicaraguan so-called Freedom Fighters, the right-wing death squads down in South Central America. So that was the second October surprise. You know, I guess you'd call it the November surprise when George Bush had the Supreme Court pull the election out. Although it was in October, I think, that his brother Jeb purged 60 or 80,000 African Americans off the voter rolls in Florida. They got it close enough for him to steal. So anyhow, the question is, I mean, given that virtually every Republican who's ever been elected has done so by having an October surprise that was treason, what's the October surprise going to be this year? Is it this poll, this 2012 voter registration confirmation survey that Ralph Reed says he's mailing out to 10 million Americans that calls Obama communist implicitly?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Or is it that they're going to kick 5 or 10 million people off the voting rolls or already have? What do you think the October surprise is going to be? Your thoughts up next. Tom Hartman here with you, and Marianne in Yorkville, Illinois. Hey, Marianne, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I love your show. I was on my way home from work, and I heard you talking to a gentleman. I only caught part of it. He was part of a union, and you were talking about his insurance.
Yeah.
My husband is a proud member of Local 597, the Pipefitters Local in Chicago. Unions kind of fall under a different category because many of them are self-insured.
Right.
They're not considered an insurance company. The Local 597 does all the insurance that they use, like Blue Cross Blue Shield is what they call a third-party administrator, just handle the paperwork and everything.
Right.
So they are kind of out of that realm of getting a check. I felt sorry for that guy. He's going to go home and ask his wife where that money went. But we're not as part of that. Although I have to say 597 gladly accepted all the Obamacare changes, and we're running with it, and it's a great plan, and I'm sorry that people don't see it that way.
Yeah, by the time we were done talking, he was not quite so sure of his hatred of Obamacare, and that's the thing. You know, the answer to so many of these right-wing attacks, which are almost always vague and couched in generalizations like this survey from Ralph Reed, you know, the anti-American communist dictator of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, calls Barack Obama Comrade Obama, you know, those kind of things, they don't have facts. And when you give them facts, they go, oh.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know that.
I happen to be a medical assistant, and I work in the medical field. And when the current governor, or the governor that's running for the Republican Party, I hate to even say his name, said that, you know, healthcare is in the ER, I challenge anyone to go and get a pap smear in an ER. He doesn't comprehend what healthcare actually is, because like you said earlier, if he needs something, he can just write a check. And I can't tell you how many patients that I've seen that have no insurance, and it breaks your heart. It really does, to see people not get the health care that they need and that they deserve. And yes, it is a right to have health care. I'm sorry. I believe that.
Yeah. Oh, you know, we had a friend in Portland, an acquaintance, really, somebody that we knew, who had no health insurance. She cleaned houses for a living. She, so she had very little income. She had two of her kids helping her. I mean, this was like a little family business. I don't know how much they made a year, but I'd be astounded if it was over $20,000 or $30,000, if that.
Mm-hmm.
And she got breast cancer. And, we chipped in for her chemo.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, she got a surgeon who would do the surgery if they could just cover the cost of the hospital, and the hospital cut her a deal on the cost, and she couldn't stay as long as you normally stay and all that kind of stuff. And even that wiped her out. And then she had to go around asking people that she knew and people that she, you know, friends of people that she knew, you know, can you kick in $50 or $100 to help pay for my chemotherapy? And the chemo doctor gave her the chemo at cost. And normally they, you know, they mark it up quite substantially. It's a major profit source for oncologists.
Well, my mother died from ovarian cancer 15 years ago, and thank God she had insurance. But after she passed away and going through all the paperwork and looking at the explanation of benefits to see what was charged, I mean, there was one stint where she was going every day, 5 days a week for like 4 weeks, and every day she went, it was $10,000.
Wow.
It's just astronomical, and how they expect people that don't make enough money. I mean, my husband makes a wonderful salary, but we couldn't afford that if we didn't have insurance.
No, and most Americans can't. In fact, that's why half of all bankruptcies in the United States are the result of somebody getting sick. And I remember sitting in Denmark when we were doing this program about 4 years ago from the studios of Radio Denmark, or Danish Radio, DR, that's what it's called. We were doing this show from their studios, and I had a member of the conservative opposition party on. In fact, it was mostly conservatives that I interviewed in Denmark because I was fascinated about their worldview. I knew what the liberals had to say, and although we had a couple of them on as well. And here I had this politician. He was one of the senior members of parliament who was a, quote, conservative. And I said, so how many people in Denmark go bankrupt because somebody in their family gets sick? And he blinked a couple of times, and you know, instead of answering, I mean, just, you know, blink, blink, blink. And I'm like, do you know how many? And he said, well, I think maybe I misunderstood your question. Could you ask again? You know, my English isn't always that good, and his English was brilliant. And I said, how many people in Denmark go bankrupt, get wiped out because somebody gets sick? And he said, do you mean how many people in Denmark go bankrupt because somebody gets sick in their family? And I said, yes. And he said, well, nobody, of course. Nobody in Europe goes bankrupt because their family gets sick. I mean, that's an absurd question.
Yeah.
And I said, well, in America, it's half of all bankruptcies. And he looked at me with this, and this is the conservative. He looked at me with just this look of just utter shock, you know, aghast. You know, how do you Americans do that? And I'm like, well, you know, you got it. You know, this was a couple of years ago. You know, you need to talk to John McCain, you know, or somebody like that. I mean, they can explain it to you. So anyway, Marianne, thank you for the call. And thanks for listening to WCPT. Bob in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to follow up on, I believe your last caller, was it Mary, whose husband was out of 597. I'm also out of that same union. I'm in Local 72 here in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
In regard to being self-insured, she's exactly right. Most of our locals are self-insured, so it affects us a little bit differently. We pay a major insurance company like we use Cigna, it could be United, Blue Cross, to manage our fund.
Right.
And then we get the benefit of their scale, and we have access to their networks and their agreements with the different hospitals. But at the end of the day, we actually pay all the fees for the services.
Right.
And our insurance is usually commensurate with what most insurance companies offer. But when you have to, have your kids on there, and I'm not knocking it off because I have kids and I'm glad they can be on my insurance till I believe it's 27 now.
26,
That's something that we didn't project for, or our funds didn't project for. You know, they knew that a lot of kids wouldn't go to college.
Oh, so that's raising your costs a little bit, you mean?
Yeah, and so I think at the end of the day, it's going to cost us more in the short term, but I think in the long run, it's going to be much better because of the preventative care.
Yeah, I think you're right, and that might have been what he was talking about, and there might be some truth to it. Thank you, Bob.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Well, I got to tell you, I've said it before, we have the smartest listeners in all of talk radio on this program. I am so honored to be here with you. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, 35 minutes past the hour. And Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, on Friday afternoon when I said call back on Monday, you did. Here you are. What's up?
Today's Monday?
Well, it's Tuesday, but close enough.
Hey, old buddy, how you doing?
I am well. I didn't see you on the board yesterday. So what's up?
Okay. I think I have a good talking point, and I need you to think
I think that you and your intelligentsia fraternity need to expand on it. And the right and Ryan and Nitwit are saying that Medicare's going broke.
Right.
So give it to us. Let us privatize it. And we'll significantly take profit in it that is not being taken now, but we won't tell you how we're going to do that.
Well, you heard what Tommy Thompson said, didn't you?
Do what?
Did you hear what Tommy Thompson said yesterday?
No, what did he say?
He's running for the Senate in Minnesota and or Wisconsin, one or the other. Whatever.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Thank you. And he came out and he said, basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have the quote in front of me, but he said words to the effect of, if we produce vouchers so that people can use the vouchers to buy into private health insurance companies, the healthy people are going to go to the private health insurance companies, the sick people are going to go to Medicare. Medicare is going to be crushed by those expenses. Medicare,
absolutely.
You know, 10, 15 years down the road, Medicare is going to be bankrupt and out of business. And, we did it. We got rid of Medicare. No more socialized medicine.
Yeah, just like their prescription drug benefit that they did off budget.
Yep.
And with an illegal vote in the House.
Yep. And also the way that they're doing it with our public schools. This is the exact same strategy with public schools. Create a bunch of for-profit charter schools or even not-for-profit charter schools. Use federal funds to pay for those schools or state funds or local funds. Have the whole parent trigger thing, this new movie that's out. I mean, all this stuff, it's very, very deceptive. This is the exact same strategy. Skim the easy-to-teach, high-performing kids off the public schools. Put them in the charter schools, the less expensive kids to educate. And one of the things that we've seen with charter schools is that they may say, oh, we accept everybody. But over the course of the school year, some charter schools get rid of as many as half of their kids. They counsel them out. In other words, they get rid of the more expensive kids to educate and dump them back into the public schools. And so what you end up with is, a couple of years down the road, 5, 10, 15 years down the road, the kids that are really expensive to educate are exclusively in the public schools, which are going screaming broke. And the kids that are relatively easy to educate are in the charter schools. And it looks like the charter schools are just doing great. And then somebody comes along and says, why do we even have these private schools? This is stupid. And, everything gets privatized.
Well, here's my point, and I think you'll agree with me,
sure.
Especially on education, mm-hmm. health care, and any social benefits that benefit what's left of the dwindling middle class in this country, primarily to the private sector.
Right.
And that is the Republicans are all about money and control with their changes they want to make. You can't convince me of anything else. They're trying to sell it as nobility, but it's all about money, power, and control of the money.
Right.
And they're greedsters. They're corporate trickle-nomists. And I don't trust them at all. And I want to say one other talking point. I live here locally where people claim to vote 85% Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And the government locally is 85% supposedly Republican. A Democrat couldn't get elected here if he was Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you what they did 2 weeks ago. The economy's struggling for the private sector. Now, remember, the Republicans are the champions of private sector. That's what they'd have everybody believe out there.
Right.
So the economy, my wife and I is in small business, and it's just barely sticking its head up where there's a little glimmer of hope that things are turning around
mm-hmm.
and that some of that Obama money's getting around and it's starting to look positive. And the local government, what did they do? The party, the Republican Party, less government, gave everybody across the board in government big fat pay raises.
Yeah.
Republicans.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now,
they're very good at that. They take care of their own, you know.
It's pathetic what they do. It's pathetic. And they've got Rush Limbaugh, the drug-addled microphone of America. He's out there fogging the dummies and the low-information voters. He's got their minds in a fog.
Yeah,
I want to tell you one other funny thing, if I may, please.
If it's less than 15 seconds, Armin, it's all yours.
Okay, you can always spot a Romney voter, potential voter, because when you go to the mall or go shopping, they constantly zigzag when they're walking. They flip back and forth like he does.
Okay. Have you noticed, Armin, that Romney walks funny?
Well, if I
watch sometime, you know, watch as he's walking up to the stage and things. He's walking like Grandpappy Amos. And I've been trying to figure out, why is he walking funny? I think his magic underwear is too tight.
Well, is he
I'm
got
serious.
Hands down there?
I'm not making this up, Armin. I'm serious. The next time you see one of these things, watch the way this guy walks and the way that he climbs stairs. He's having a challenge, and I don't think that he's got arthritis. I think his magic underwear is too tight. Anyhow, Armin, thanks a lot for the call. Rick in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hey, Tom, it's good to see you healthy, man. I hope Louise is doing well.
Thank you. You had a theory about the October surprise?
Yeah, I was just wondering, just a question. What if old Mitt there was talking with Israel and the conservatives in Israel about a preemptive strike on Iran?
Well, you know, Bibi Netanyahu is an old college buddy of Mitt's.
Ah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they go way back. And or an early business buddy, one or the other. Either they had a business partnership or they went to college together. But it was like literally way back in the day, you know, back when they were mm-hmm. teenagers or in their early 20s. So they've known each other for a long time. And a lot of people are wondering if that's why Netanyahu seems to be injecting himself into American politics. And, you know, the right wing, you know, Rick, thanks for the call. The right wing is going all nuts about, oh, Obama's not meeting with Netanyahu. You know, while the UN is here. Well, he's not meeting with Morsi either. He's not meeting with the head of Egypt. He's not meeting with anybody. And why? Because as his press secretary, Jay Carney, said yesterday, he had to meet with everybody. The fact of the matter is that we are 6 weeks out from a presidential election. And any meeting that the president of the United States has right now with any foreign leader is going to be turned into a political event, whether it is implicitly by him. People would say, oh, he's just meeting with him because he wants to score points with Jewish Americans, Egyptian Americans, you know, fill in the blank, you know, whoever the president of whatever the country is, Costa Rican Americans. Or he met with that guy, but he didn't meet with this guy. Why did he meet with Bibi Netanyahu and the head of Egypt and he didn't meet with the head of Libya, for example? Right. I mean, you can just never satisfy them. Somebody will figure out a way to politicize it, or it'll be implicitly political. And so anyhow. Patrick in Alberta, Canada. Hey, Patrick, thanks for listening on SiriusXM in Canada. What's up?
Hi. Hey. I've been listening to you pretty regularly because I'm out on the road all the time. I drive a pilot truck for overload commercial escorts, and I live in the oil capital of North America, and we're doing real well up here. I wrote a letter to one of your compatriots there a little while back. I haven't heard from him, but I have basically this point about your healthcare system. It sucks, right?
Yeah. Do you have you're Canadian. Right, you know. Do you have any familiarity with the American healthcare system?
Oh, yes. We have friends. We're just down in the States there for 3.5 weeks, and we've got friends in Idaho. Young family, struggling to make ends meet, lost everything in your recession there. Mm-hmm. And they're paying $900 a month for basic healthcare for four people.
And what do you pay in Canada?
Nothing.
Nothing.
It comes out of taxes. Comes out of taxes. Let me set the table for you on where this came from, because my father was intimately involved in it.
Okay.
In 1967, we went to universal single-payer healthcare, right? Came out of taxes, pays for, you know, all the basic fundamentals, seen a knee operation, cancer, whatever.
Right.
They came along, and my dad was head of a committee that bought the Catholic hospitals. They did fair market value, bought them all out, and they're, you know, essentially not-for-profit, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're run by Alberta Health Services, where I am.
Mm-hmm.
So you go into a hospital, you got nothing, you come out owing nothing.
Right.
Right? It doesn't cost you a nickel. That creates such a competitive environment for business because you don't have that $800-$900 a month healthcare premium you got to pay for every worker.
Right. So anybody can start a small business and they can hire people.
Right. And what happened was they kicked the insurance companies out of the healthcare financing system, right? Because they got to make a buck on the way by. I mean, you know, invest capital, you want a return.
Right.
What happened was the insurance companies who were at that time providing the healthcare morphed into providing extended healthcare benefits.
Uh-huh. So if you want plastic surgery, you mean?
No. If you covers your drugs out of the hospital.
Ah, okay.
You can buy dental coverage. You get life insurance. You get accidental death insurance.
Right.
You get extended health care for like chiropractor, massage, all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And maybe some extended benefits where you get a semi-private room and that sort of thing.
Right.
So I have my own company. It's just me. And I pay $400 a month for that by choice.
Right.
My wife works for a large law firm and she pays $200 because she pays half, right?
Right.
I mean, just it levels the landscape.
Yeah.
It makes starting a small business so easy, even if you can't provide extended health care. But the insurance companies don't go broke. They still make money on the extended health care.
Right. Yeah, they'll always figure out a way to make a buck. I mean, you know, the marketplace doesn't go away. Patrick, thank you for sharing your Canadian perspective and experience with us. It's much appreciated. Thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's interesting. Usually the deluge of calls from Canadians come after I debate a conservative who says, Canadians hate their health insurance. Then they all call and go, no, we love it.
Just give me faith, make me believe. Come on, save me. Save me. Mr. Wildman Man.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. What do you think is going to be the October surprise? I'm wondering if it's going to be an invasion of Iran or something going on with Iran, but just my own personal opinion. I don't know. Laura in Chicago. Hey, Laura, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Oh, fine. Laura, can I come back to your call? Talk Radio News just called in. Normally we have a newscast at this moment. Thanks. I'm just going to put you on hold here, and I will pick you up on the other end. Who is it?
Correspondent.
Yeah, from the Sam Trudeau from the United Nations. This is UN Week in Washington, D.C. Sam, what's going on in the UN?
Well, as you know, President Obama gave his annual address at the UN General Assembly today.
Mm-hmm.
And we can definitely hear a lot of election campaign issues throughout the speech.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Republicans have argued that the recent upheaval in the Middle East is a consequence of the president's policy in the region. And President Obama started off his address right away by honoring the work of Ambassador Chris Stevens and then calling on world leaders to confront the type of religious extremism and religious incitement that led to the deadly attacks on the consulates in Benghazi.
Yeah, well, I would say that what's been going on in the Middle East is largely the result of Obama's policies. He stood in Egypt early in his presidency, literally on the same platform with this dictator, Mubarak, and said the United States will stand with any people who decide that they want to self-governance. He basically said, tear down this dictator. And the people of the Middle East took him seriously. And I think he's right that, you know, when you make a transition from a dictatorial form of government to democracy, there's a period, of rough sledding. I mean, you know, we became a democracy in arguably in 1789 when we ratified the Constitution. And it was, 71 years later that we had a civil war. I mean, things happen.
I mean, absolutely. Growing these types of institutions, for Egypt to grow their democratic institutions and build them, it's going to take certainly a long time, and there will be bumps in the road, absolutely.
Sure. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's just common sense. You would, and you look at the history of any country, whether it was the French Revolution, the American Revolution, or anybody else, and it takes time for democracies to grow, even relatively recent ones.
I was part of the president's speech today. I think he essentially said that the U.S. wasn't, as concerned as they were by the recent events, that they weren't going to sort of give up on the Arab Spring, and these countries has marched towards democracy.
Yeah, good. So what else happened at the U.N.?
Well, and after the president also spoke about Iran, and he didn't really say anything new. He said that the United States would still favor diplomacy, but the time was running out for diplomacy, and that in the end, the U.S. had to act to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon than they would. But then a few hours later, the Emir of Qatar spoke to the GA, and he made a statement essentially calling on Arab nations to intervene militarily in Syria. So that was the first time that such a high-placed Arab leader has spoken out in favor of military intervention against the Assad regime.
Hmm. Very interesting. Okay. And anything else going on at the UN or around the world you want to share with us?
Well, as you know, tomorrow Iranian President Ahmadinejad will speak tomorrow morning to the General Assembly,
mm-hmm.
as he usually does, and as expected, there will probably be a walkout in protest of his speech, and there'll be they're expecting a few thousand protesters outside the UN tomorrow to picket Ahmadinejad's speech. And I think that's pretty much, that's one of sort of the big events that people are waiting for, even though, you know, everyone kind of knows what Ahmadinejad is going to say already.
Yeah. Is Hugo Chavez there this year, or is he not?
So Hugo Chavez, there was talk earlier on that he might be there, but it seems that he won't be able to travel. You know, he's in his own election campaign right now.
Right.
He's also
plus he's recovering from cancer.
Exactly. So I think he's still undergoing some treatment, so he wasn't able to travel. And he hasn't spoken to the General Assembly since 2008 when he sort of made that crack about Bush and the smell of sulfur.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. Sam, you're Canadian?
That's right.
Uh-huh. I heard the about.
I try to hide it, but it comes out.
Your voice will always give you away. So, okay, Sam Trudeau with the Talk Radio News Service live from the United Nations, talkradionews.com. Sam, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Good talking with you. By the way, the Talk Radio News Service report is brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. You can sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman at donsiegelman.org. And how are we doing, Shane? Oh, we got okay, we can pick up a phone call here. Great. Let's see here. Ray in Battle Creek, Michigan. Hey, Ray, what's up?
I'm not Ray. I'm Larry.
Oh, I'm sorry, Larry. It says Ray right here. So what's up? Are you in Battle Creek?
Yes.
Okay, close enough. What's on your mind?
I've heard from several different sources that Israel does not have a national debt that the Americans pay it every year. Is that true?
I genuinely don't know. I do know that we provide them with two-plus, maybe three-plus billion dollars in foreign aid. They and I believe they're our number one foreign aid recipient. Egypt is number two. Maybe it's a little more than $3 billion, rather, because Egypt gets in the neighborhood of $3 billion. So I think Egypt gets a little, Israel gets a little more. But whether or not that means they have a national debt, I honestly don't know. I'm sorry, I can't answer the question for you. George in Sedona, Arizona. Hey, George, what's on your mind?
Tom, thank you very much, you and your wife, for being there for us. And I just had one question. Danielle said to ask the one question is, how can anyone remain optimistic in this country or around the world with everything that's going on?
Well, Ray, it's a really simple answer. You look at the grand arc of history. I mean, during the Great Depression, we had 35% unemployment. That was real unemployment. You had people, you know, dying, literally elderly people dying of hypothermia, of freezing to death in the winter. You had people dying of starvation and heat in the summer. We had 150 years ago, we had a civil war where, you know, brothers were killing brothers, and it just tore this nation apart. This country, we fought successfully World War One and World War Two. We have been to hell and back over and over and over again. And every time, and we had the Great Depression in the 1930s, and every time the American people somehow rise above it, come out of it, and not only come out of it, but come out of it a better nation. Women can vote now. They couldn't vote, you know, just, you know, in my grandfather's lifetime. African Americans, civil rights, gay civil rights. I see America as continually moving forward, and I want to be an instrument of that. George, thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, I was going to watch 60 Minutes this weekend and see what President Obama had to say and see how Mitt Romney was going to rationalize his 15% tax rate and, whether he had anything to say about health care beyond, well, hey, you can show up at the emergency room. Good luck getting a pap smear there, but you can show up at the emergency room. When I turned to CBS, what was on but Big League Football? The NFL was on. And it went on and it went on and it went on and it went on and it went on. And it turns out that there was a reason. So, let's ask Dave Zirin, who knows about this stuff, knows a lot about this stuff. The edgeofsports.com actually is Dave's website. He's the sports editor for The Nation magazine. Nation, thenation.com as well. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Oh, hey, it's great to be here, Tom.
It's been a while since we've talked. What's the deal here? Why are these football games taking so long?
Well, because you have scab officials who they are politely called on the broadcast replacement referees. But you saw last night exactly the price that you pay when you have unskilled, lousy, untrained scab labor in a union workplace. And it's so bad, and Tom, you'll appreciate this, is that you had people like Scott Walker, Governor Walker, and Paul Ryan saying in speeches and in tweets that they wanted the union refs to get back to work, which is amazing on one level. But on the other hand, I think it says such a, so much about those two men, especially Scott Walker, that they don't want skilled union labor in the classrooms or putting out our fires, but they really do need them on our football fields.
Yeah, it's really quite remarkable. It's rather startling. So where did this all begin? How did this start?
Well, this all started with the NFL owners, who are about as cosseted and isolated a group of one percenters that you're going to find in this here United States. And that's, I know that's saying something. They make Mitt Romney seem like a man of the people. And these guys have operated from the perspective of, we're going to lock out these referees. Why are they going to lock them out? Because their contract ended and the owners decided that they had no right to their pensions. For as long as there have been NFL referees, they've had a pension plan. The owner said, no, from now on, we want you to have a 401k. The referees said, well, why is that the case? We've always had this pension plan, and the league has never done better economically. Why would you take this away from us? And the owner said, well, we're not going to negotiate with you on this question.
The owners basically said, because we can.
Exactly, because we can. So we're going to lock you out. And that's a very important point, the lockout. It's not a strike, it's a lockout. And the owners have locked out the referees, just like the owners locked out the players last year, just like NBA owners locked out their players last year, and just like National Hockey League owners locked out their players, are locking out their players right now. And what all these lockouts have in common is the same law firm hired to execute the lockout and the same lead negotiators who are executing these lockouts. So this is about a conscious slash and burn labor management strategy that's in the world of sports.
Wow. And is slash and burn with regard to labor. This is now even it's even hitting the players.
Yeah,
just an anecdotal question, Dave. My understanding is that the Green Bay Packers are owned by their fans. But other than that, if you want to own a football team, you've got to basically be a rich guy.
And not just a rich guy, but a plutocrat at the very tops. You have to have $2 billion of disposable income if you want to be able to own a team. And that's actually something that's changed, too, very much, Tom, is that the days of the owner who saw the sports franchise as their family business are as long gone as the trolley.
Right.
Those days are done. They're as done as the Buick Roadmaster. Nowadays, if you're going to own an NFL team, usually you've made billions of dollars in another economic sector, usually the financial sector. And these are folks who are out for the kill, and they're out for keeps. And they really do see lockouts as a very, very respectable labor management strategy because they're not used to losing. It's like you said, Tom, why are they doing this? Because they can.
So this is basically they're doing the Bain capital strategy.
Bain capital.
You know, they're basically just going in and they're saying, how do we screw the most money out of the workers and keep it for ourselves?
And that's how they keep score. And the thing about it that's the most egregious is you mentioned the players before. This is the part that people really need to get their heads around, is that the NFL has done so much. The NFL owners have done so much to project the idea that they're very concerned about the health and safety of players. The owners just gave $30 million to NIH to study the long-term effects of brain injuries. They're facing a lawsuit made up of 2,000 former NFL players, including Hall of Famers Art Monk and Bruce Smith, who said that the NFL knowingly put them in harm's way with regards to head injuries. And now here the NFL is actually risking the health of players by taking the referees who are trained, who go through comprehensive training to identify concussions and to know when to get emergency medical personnel on the field. And they have removed them from the field for a group of people whose best refereeing experience involves enterprises like the Lingerie Football League. And I wish I was
seriously.
Kidding. Yes.
The Lingerie Football League refs
That's
are refereeing NFL games now?
Yes.
I thought that they were just college football guys, you know, because one of these refs the other day, you know, pulled a wrong call and they were using college football standards instead of NFL standards, were they not?
Yes, but there is not one Division I level college football ref who crossed the lockout picket line and is out there on the field.
So they don't have even the cream of the crop of the college football guys. They've got the B team and the C team.
Yeah, and the D team and the F team, but it's really the S team.
And the lingerie.
The lingerie football league. And also other people whose experience involves 8-on-8. One of the referees is actually a former professional poker player, and if you know anything about the NFL's wariness about being in any way, shape, or form connected to gambling, you know how dangerous that is. Usually they have such serious rules about any connection to that world in Las Vegas, lest it mar the integrity of the game. But right. To hear so many fans talk about this, and by the way, a million tweets were sent in the immediate aftermath of the game last night commenting on what just took place.
That's incredible.
And it is incredible. If you consider that 9 million tweets were sent about the Democratic National Convention over the course of that entire week.
Well,
about
you know, NFL football pulls more viewers than pretty much anything else on TV. So there's a certain logic to that. You would think that... You know, in a way, the referees for a football game are not unlike the judges and the jury system and the police officers in a democracy. I mean, they're the ones who enforce the rules, who maintain the rules and enforce the rules. And you would think that, you know, just like in our democracy, we would want those people to be well-trained, well-paid, and impartial. That you would want, and the very best. I mean, we don't tragically have it. I've always said when we start paying our cops and our teachers, you know, the same as we pay our doctors, we're going to have a much better society. But you'd think that the NFL would want to have their refs. I mean, they're the ones who are making the game work. They're lubricating the game. Everything flows through them. You'd want them to be the very best.
And the worst is that we're not even talking about that much money, Tom. I mean, this is so much more about ideology than it is about the financial bottom line. It's been calculated that they could settle this right now, the NFL owners, at the cost of $62,000 per team per week. That's basically what they spend on parking. They make more on parking in a given week, a typical team, than $60,000. That is peanuts. That is money between the cushions.
Well, it's probably
what
they make in their peanut concession.
Exactly. And if you're a fan of the Washington football team, you know that they were caught selling peanuts from Independence Airlines, which went out of business. They bought all their old peanuts and started selling them.
It is the Bain Capital model.
There's your Bain Capital model. It's just anything to vacuum the crumbs out of our pocket. But what they're doing is they're endangering their players and they're endangering the very integrity of the league.
Amazing. It's Dave Zirin, right?
Yeah.
Dave Zirin.
Dave Zirin, like a fire siren with a Z.
There you go. Dave Zirin, thanks so much for being with us, Dave. And edgeofsports.com, you can check it out. He's also the sports editor for The Nation magazine. Dave, thank you again.
My privilege, Tom.
Much appreciated.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, obviously that's not going to be the October surprise. What do you think is going to be the October surprise this election season? Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Wondering why Mitt Romney walks that way. Mitt Romney. Why does Tom Hartman talk that way? Why Mitt Romney walks that way? Somebody earlier called and said, is it true that Israel has no public debt, has no, you know, national deficit because we pay it off every year? Turns out the answer, and thank you, Shano, for Googling this and checking it out and finding it out. Although I probably should have checked our chat room. I'll bet they were on top of it, too. The debt of Israel is 74% of GDP. So the United States GDP is around $15 trillion a year. 74% of that would be, what, around 11, 12 trillion, something like that. So Israel's debt is about where ours was a couple of years ago. Their budget deficit is 3% of GDP. So expenses, $75 billion, revenue, $68 billion. Just for the record, because I didn't know the answer to the question, and I don't want to leave that just hanging out there. So, 2012 voter registration confirmation survey, a pledge to vote 10 million Americans. This very official looking form, you know, complete with a barcode at the top and a big letters, 2012 voter registration confirmation survey. Yes, I want to confirm that I'm registered to vote. Okay, what does this thing say? I have to fill some things out. Issue summary. The anti-American communist dictator of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, calls President Barack Obama, calls Barack Obama Comrade Obama, and remarked that he believes President Obama is to the left of himself and Fidel Castro. Do you think Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro see President Obama as an ally of theirs, or do you think Chavez was just joking about President Obama's communist beliefs? Question three. When Fidel Castro hailed the passage of Obamacare as a miracle, do you think this is because he is honestly concerned with the well-being of Americans, or is it more likely that Castro sees Obamacare as the fastest, surest way to bring socialism to America? Who knows? I know. Actually, you know, the word socialism has been so vilified. Obviously, these guys are, you know, they're using it in the old Soviet Union socialist context. Union of Soviet Socialist States, but most Europeans would call themselves socialists. Many Canadians would. Many people in Central and South America would. I just, you know, it's incredible. It is just incredible. Laura in Chicago. Hey, Laura, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I got disconnected earlier. I wanted to know what you thought about the Senate Joint Resolution 41. It passed in the last minute of this past session, and it advises that the time is running out on diplomacy, and it rejects any United States policy that would rely on efforts to contain a nuclear weapons-capable Iran.
Right.
And it passed 90-1 with only Rand Paul voting against it.
Right. Good on Rand Paul for that, by the way. Basically, this was a way... And I'm sure it was promoted by the people who are all hysterical about Iran, and there are several different factions that fall into that, from the neocons to the Israel lobby to the people who are to the MEC folks and the anti-Iranian people, you know, to the people who are afraid of Islam. I mean, there's just this whole circle of them, and not that they all fall into the same basket. There are several, many different baskets there, and people who are just looking for political advantage. It was just a way of getting a senator on the record as saying, you know, we don't think Iran should get a nuke. I frankly, I'll just tell you personally, I don't think it matters if Iran gets a nuke. It wouldn't be a good idea for any country to get a nuke. But the fact of the matter is Pakistan has a nuke. There's already a Muslim country with a nuke. Israel has nukes. India has nukes. You know, there's lots and lots of countries that have nukes and they don't use them. We haven't had a nuclear war yet. God forbid we should have one. But. You know, I think that there's a lot more things that are far more important for us to be concerned about, like the fact that there are 7 billion human beings on Earth. We are modifying the environment and topography of this planet in ways that may be irreversible. And of those 7 billion human beings on Earth, about 5 billion of us don't have reliable access to sanitation, water, decent food, and live on less than $5 a day. I mean, there's some real serious problems out there. You know, the role of women in so many of the among probably 4 or 5 billion people around the world as well. That is adding to that increase in population, you know, the oppression of women. There are so many things, frankly, that in my mind are so much more important than Iran. This is just a canard. But it also adds to my suspicion that the October surprise may have something to do with Iran. That makes any sense, Laura?
Yeah, that's what I'm tired. That's what I called. I don't care if Iran gets a nuclear weapon either. I just wonder about the timing of this and the fact that all of the senators, 90 voted for it. Netanyahu was coming, you know, Obama had this big.
There were 9 who did not vote.
No, 90, yeah, 9 did not vote.
Right.
It was, of the Democrats, it was Boxer and Murray who did not vote. Even, and I want you to ask him about this, even Senator Sanders voted for this Senate Joint Resolution 41.
Well, call him on Friday and ask him. My guess would be that this is the kind of thing like, you know, are you in favor of mom and apple pie and puppies, you know, and you know, that's how it's being portrayed. We'll ask, you know, call in, Bernie will be on Friday. Call him in and ask him. Laura, thanks a lot for the call. Gus in New York City, listening on WWRL. I've got a minute to the break. Gus, it's all yours.
Hey, I was just hearing you talk about the privatization of education, and
yes,
I wanted
sir.
To give people an update what's happening in New York City schools, because I'm a teacher in the inner city in Bronx. I found out this summer that the two best math teachers in my middle school had left, and it's because of these new state teacher evaluations where the test scores of the students are going to be counted against the teachers.
Right, so if you're a teacher, you get punished for having kids in your classroom who are homeless.
Right, or they come to you 3 years behind, and you're not going to be able to make up, you know, that headway. Well, we found out on the first day of school that our school now has a target on it because New York State got one of the No Child Left Behind waivers, and now turns over to state control the formula for what constitutes a failing school.
Oh, no.
And even though my school had been making adequate ratings under No Child Left Behind,
you're going to get nailed. Yeah. Gus, I want to rant about this after the break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Heal when that guy steps on me. Yeah. I want to riff on this a little bit. We'll do it when we come right back, particularly about what I saw on MSNBC yesterday. The good, the bad, and the very, very pythogeniciously ugly. The good. New Yorkers. Last week, the American Freedom Defense Initiative, an anti-Muslim group, began putting up Islamophobic ads in New York City's subway stations. Excuse me. While New York City transit officials tried to block the ads, they lost their lawsuit against the AFDI. The hateful and ignorant ads read, "In any war between a civilized man and the savage, support the civilized man." And then they go on to talk about the Arab world in Israel, or jihad in Israel, actually. Seeing the obvious hatred in the ads, New Yorkers have begun to cover the ads with stickers reading racist and hate speech. AFDI's efforts are promoting more animosity toward the U.S. in the Middle East and among the Muslim community. Kudos to the people of New York for standing up to this latest byproduct of Islamophobia in the United States. The bad. Congressman Paul Ryan and vice presidential nominee. In a town hall meeting this morning, Ryan suggested that preventing gay people from marrying is, quote, a universal human value. Yes, he actually said that. Here he is.
The things you talk about, like traditional marriage and family and entrepreneurship, these aren't values that are indicative to any one person or race or creed or color. These are American values. These are universal human values.
Yes. By arguing against marriage equality, the congressman is suggesting that America was built on ignorance, injustice, and inequality. To some extent, it's true, but those are nowhere near the larger values that from our founding fathers to today we had in mind when we formed and built this great nation, and they certainly shouldn't be universal human values. And the very, very ugly staffers for Senator Scott Brown. This Saturday at a rally for Brown in Boston, supporters of Brown and supporters of Elizabeth Warren came face to face. While it seemed like a typical political protest for a while, take a look at what supporters of Senator Brown started to do. As you can hear, supporters of Brown were making Native American war call sounds in reference to Elizabeth Warren's Cherokee heritage. And they were also making tomahawk arm gestures. Even more shocking is the revelation that some of those engaged in these outrageous behaviors are staffers on Senator Brown's campaign. It's bad enough that these ignorant and hateful displays occurred, but the fact that those in the Brown campaign were involved, that is very, very ugly. That's mind-bogglingly ugly. It's just truly astounding. Jim in Raton, New Mexico. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Jim.
I was thinking how easily the Martin Niemöller quote could be applied to the voter suppression.
Okay, Pastor Martin Niemöller was a Protestant minister who who famously wrote words to the effect of, first they came for the trade unionists and I was not a trade union, or first, I think it was first they came for the communists, whatever
communists.
It was, and the trade unionists, and then the Catholics, and then the Jews, and then they came for me, and there was nobody to defend me. Right. Okay. So.
If Alec has its way about it, it will find one excuse right after the other to suppress one group right after another until only the 1% are eligible to vote.
Well, you know, what's particularly poignant and ironic about that is that a lot of seniors who are white thought that they would always be exempted from these voter suppression efforts by the Republican Party because they typically voted Republican and because they were white. And in fact, the Republican Party is aggressively trying to suppress the senior vote as well. Seniors, students, you know, inner city residents, largely African Americans, and Hispanics, and it's just, and poor people, the working poor, and it is, and a lot of white students are being suppressed as well. So it has gone way beyond race. It is now a matter of class. And, you know, if you're not rich and you're not white and you're not middle-aged, which is basically the Republican demographic, then you don't get to vote in Republican world, and at least in Alec world. You're spot on, Jim, spot on. Thanks for the call. And well said. Bill in Sarasota, Florida. Hey, Bill, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
I'm a physician in Florida,
mm-hmm.
and I have a large percentage of patients that are on Medicare. So I have a little bit different perspective on the Ryan voucher system. You know,
right.
It was said earlier that the Ryan voucher system might destroy Medicare, but most of my patients that are on Medicare are very, very happy with Medicare. I know very few of them that would want to go to private insurance. So I think if they were given a choice in information, I don't think the Ryan voucher system is a real threat. I think what the Democrats ought to do is say, okay, let's have a public and private option for seniors. It works really well. Let's have a public and private option for everyone in the country then. Sort of turn
right.
it back around on them.
Oh, in other words, put the public option back into Obamacare.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Now, with regard to Medicare, Bill, my understanding is, based on what Tommy Thompson said, is that what they want to do is that the private market will slightly undercut the cost of Medicare, so that people will gravitate, you know, to save an extra $10 a month or whatever, they'll gravitate to the private insurance, at least over the short term. And then the private insurance companies, of course, are going to say to a significant fraction of people over 65, you know, maybe 5%, maybe 50%, you probably could tell me better than I would know, those people who have serious pre-existing conditions. They have high blood pressure, they're at risk of stroke and heart attack, those people who've had cancer, you know, fill in the blank, that they're simply not going to cover them, or they're going to cover them, but instead of the $8,000 voucher that Paul Ryan wants to give them, it's going to be $20,000. And so those people are going to say, well, you know, the private health insurance was $8,000 and Medicare is $8,050, so I'll go with Medicare. And so eventually Medicare ends up with all the really expensive people to care for, which crushes Medicare over time, thus eventually driving Medicare out of business, which puts us back, you know, with health insurance the way it was before Lyndon Johnson's presidency, which is basically if you're old and you're not rich, you're screwed. Makes
sense?
Well,
I mean, there will be some of that obviously the private insurances aren't going to want to cover it. But once people see the freedom they have under Medicare, where they can see any doctor, any time, as much as they want,
right.
and all the restrictions that the private insurance companies put on, you've got to be part of a panel to see patients and, you know, and got to get pre-authorized condition, pre-authorization for anything you have done. There's
right.
so much interference with the doctor-patient relationship in private that this isn't there in the in Medicare, even though the you know there's some lies about it the other way around, that I think most people would want to still stay with Medicare if they're informed about it, even the relatively healthy people.
Right. But what about that? What percentage of people do you think that the private health insurance companies would simply say, no, we're not going to cover you?
Well, I'd say probably quite a few because Medicare patients are basically fairly expensive patients to take care of.
Right. They're over 65.
They get cataracts, they get high blood pressure and that kind of stuff.
Right. So if that's the case and the private health insurance companies only end up with those rare, really healthy seniors, they can
right.
afford to drop their premiums significantly below Medicare, right?
Right, but I don't think it's going to be a huge population that's going to drive Medicare out of business.
Yeah.
And like I said, if the Democrats say, yeah, let's have a private and public option for seniors, let's have it for everyone.
Yeah. I'm bringing a public option into Obamacare. And in fact, a lot of states are going to be doing that as time goes on. I think by 2015, 2016, no later than 2016, you're going to see Vermont offering a single payer health insurance program. You're going to see, what's the state? Montana, I'm pretty sure, is going to have a public, a single payer healthcare system for everybody. I think that, the healthcare landscape in the United States within a decade is going to be radically different than it is. And Bill, I hope you're right about Medicare. Thanks a lot for the call and thanks for your insights. Appreciate it. Gary in Minneapolis, listening on 950 AM. Hey, Gary, what's up?
I just kind of wanted to give you a heads up regarding Ralph Reed. I was watching PBS a couple weeks ago, Bill Moyer's show, and they had an extensive thing about it. And one of the things they said was when they contact somebody to vote for the candidate that he wants, they do it like 7 to 12 times before the election happens.
Right.
And I was just like, when I watched the show, I was scared. So what I guess if somebody like that called me, I would probably end up using language that you could not use on terrestrial radio.
Or the alternative would be say, very interesting. Thank you very much. I might vote for Mitt Romney, but I'm not really sure. Why don't you call me back again next week and just burn through a lot of their resources?
That's probably a good idea too. Like all the money they spend on the 800 numbers and stuff like that. That would probably be a good idea too. But check it out online. I just wanted to give you a heads up on that.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it, Gary. Mike in Smithtown, New York. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was just calling about your good, bad, and ugly and the Elizabeth Warren incident. And, you know, what people are mocking is her false allegation that she is of Cherokee descent.
Well, her grandmother's marriage license actually identifies her as Cherokee. And
even Elizabeth Warren has walked back that.
No, no. What Elizabeth Warren has found, you know, the professional genealogist got in there and said, no, she actually wasn't. But everybody from her great-grandmother forward looked at that marriage certificate, including her husband's family, who didn't want, or her father's family, who didn't want her mother to marry them, and said, yeah, she's Cherokee. So she believed it. What's wrong with that?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And there were a lot of Cherokee who got scattered all over this country as they got driven out of Georgia in the Trail of Tears off toward Oklahoma. So it's entirely possible. 46 minutes past the hour.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Andrew in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello, Tom. I like your program. I'm a physician, and a couple of minutes ago you had a conversation with another physician regarding Medicare vouchers, private versus public option of Medicare.
Right.
I wanted just to maybe disagree with my colleague about allowing vouchers, for Medicare patients. Mm-hmm. And non-sick Medicare patients really cost very little. Well, once you get, as you said, heart disease or cancer, then the cost is astronomical.
Right.
I only wanted to ask you, would you know of any country in the world where there is a private health insurance business for profit, where an executive could make an obscene amount of money just by running a healthcare system? Because I am not aware of any. There is private health insurance all over the world, including Europe, but that's not for profit.
That's correct.
The salaries of the executives are very, very limited.
I mean, it's conceivable that in the third world such things exist. Wouldn't surprise me. Or maybe in the developing world, you know, in some of the countries of South America or Northern Africa or something like that. But possibly in some parts of Asia, but I believe that all the developed countries in Asia have national healthcare systems. Of the 34 OECD nations, and we are one of them, we are the only one that allows for-profit health insurance companies to even exist in the field of primary healthcare. Now, there are some countries that allow them to offer secondary healthcare, like Canada, for example, where, you know, all the primary health care is provided by the state or by nonprofit insurance companies like in Switzerland. But secondary health care, like, oh, you'd like a private room when you're in the hospital, or you'd like even an entire floor when you're in the hospital, you'd like catered meals, or you want, you know, boob jobs and liposuction covered by that, those kind of things. That can be offered on a for-profit basis, but not primary health insurance. What the health insurance industry is doing in the United States would cause those people to be put into prison in the rest of the developed world.
Exactly. So back to that, you know, moving patients between Medicare and the voucher private insurance program. Mm-hmm. All what we would be doing is really giving more money to the private insurance companies, because once a patient becomes sick, they are likely to drop this patient. You don't
That's
need
right.
many sick patients to bankrupt Medicare. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
If a few move back once they become sick, then you're going to bankrupt the Medicare government program, because a sick patient could cost as much as 10 times as a non-sick Medicare patient.
Right, and especially if the non-sick people who are just coming into Medicare, you know, say the people between 65 and 70, 75, who, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20, I have no idea what the percentages are, but, you know, some, I'm assuming it's a minority, but whatever it is, those people who have just been healthy all their lives, they've got great genes. I mean, you know, Louise's grandmother died when she was 97 years old and had only been to a doctor once in her life.
And very healthy. Yeah, and they could be in their 80s and very healthy as well.
Yeah, so if that 10 or 15%, if the health insurance companies offer them, you know, $1,000 less than Medicare costs, you know, or offer them something really good on the voucher, you could pull those away from Medicare and turn and basically ghettoize Medicare the same way that they're doing with schools right now. I'm with you, Andrew, and I think your colleague is wrong, but, you know, who knows? Time will tell. Andrew, thank you very much for the call. And this is what I said I want to rant about something before the break, and we'll get back to the rest of the callers here in just a second. But over the last 2 days, I have been watching on one particular television network, which typically runs things that are favorable to Democrats and progressives, a basic love fest with charter schools. And I think that this is, but personally, I mean, it's just my own personal conspiracy theory or whatever, that this has something to do with Rahm Emanuel, the Democrat, taking on the Chicago Teachers Union. And you've got increasing numbers of people in the Democratic Party who are falling in love with charter schools. And I got to tell you, somebody who has been, you know, the founder of a school in 1978, and I have been on the board of directors with the exception of 1 year ever since 1978. I'm president of the board this year. And the hunterschool.org, if you want to check it out, and Salem Children's Village, New England Salem Children's Village, .org, both .org, if you want to check them out on the web. I can tell you I'm familiar with this business. I've written, I think, 5, maybe more, books on learning disabilities. I used to do consulting work for school districts from as small as Muskegon, Michigan to as large as, you know, downtown urban Atlanta. And when you have private schools that are getting state funding that are directly competing with public schools, now that's not what the school that I'm, that we help start and that I'm on the board of does. We take kids who literally have been kicked out of public school after public school after public school and who are court mandated to be in school. But there's no place that'll take them. We take the kids who are so learning disabled that nobody else will handle them. But those schools, that charter school business, you know, I've known people in that business. I have friends in that business. And they're doing really well. Some of them are making a lot of money. And there's just, it's over time, what it's going to do is it's going to destroy public education in the United States. And it just pains me. It so pains me to see the Democratic Party embrace what they call school choice. When it's not school choice, it is the progressive ghettoization of our schools. It is the progressive transfer of the less expensive to teach students and the higher performing students into private for-profit schools, and the harder to teach and more at risk and more needy students in terms of educational content and other content into public schools that is going to destroy and further our public school system and further stratify America by class. And as a consequence of that, by race as well. And I just think that this is a disaster. I think it's just a flaming tragedy. I was watching Andrea Mitchell yesterday doing this whole love fest of this thing going, how can she do this? She knows better than this. So, anyway, end of rant. Don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. If you want to participate, if you want to have a vibrant democracy, get involved. Tag your
Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.